Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Molly and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the score. There are the Bulls. That's better, huh? That's Zach LaVine talking about the chemistry better for a night, right? And then you hear Chris Dunn. You want an alpha male? Hey, I'll be the alpha male, okay? Because Zach LaVine kind of made it sound like he was going to be the alpha male, and now Fred has talked to Chris Dunn about being the alpha male, and Chris Dunn, hey, I'm trying not to go after people, and I'm trying to get everybody together, and I'm trying to help build the team, and I'm leading by example. I'm not, but you want me to go after people? Okay.
Yeah, I'll be the bad guy.
It's not criticism, but get your head out of your. I mean, you can
actually.
You
he, can said get what, people. He said it was criticism. It will be, and he said you can criticize me too. And I'll screw up, and I'll take it too. But that's the way it's going to have to be. And this all goes back to the idea of Vincent Goodwell's story on NBC Sports Chicago yesterday morning that it's something to bear watching.
Yeah. A tug of war between Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn, and the conflict is coming. And you heard the two guys talk there. And that's what Zach LaVine had said. It's, they've got to figure some stuff out, and said that, it's going to be a tug of war. A tug and pull between somebody is what was said by Zach LaVine. And he said, the really interesting stuff that he said is you have to be more vocal. You have to be more assertive. You have to be in that role. Whether I'm 1 of 12 or 10 of 12, I've got to be that dude to do that. Or somebody has to do that. There's no way you can be a contender or a winning team without that type of personality.
And you say you can't be friends with everybody. And Chris Dunn said basically the same thing.
I'll be the bad guy.
But here's the thing. Last night, they're all good guys when you look at the stat sheet. You know, they had 21 for Dunn, 21 for Zach LaVine, 22 for Markkanen, and they all shot a decent percentage. It's 6 for 11 for Dunn, 8 of 14 for Zach LaVine, 8 of 14 for Markkanen. Probably like to see Markkanen even get some more shots than 14. But, I mean, it was a balanced attack. Inside, outside, the ball moved. Yeah, a lot of assists, except for Markkanen, no assists. But
Dunn had 9, I think, right?
Yeah, and Zach had 5. You know, and the ball seemingly has been stopping with Zach LaVine looking shot first. But I was watching that game, and he kind of gave it a glance, but he got the ball moving if it wasn't there, and he didn't force anything that I saw.
Justin Holliday had the green light, and he took advantage of it.
He had the green light from the commissioner.
Yes, exactly.
He's got to play.
The commissioner told him they have to play him, and he's got to shoot.
And he did.
How many shots does he have to make?
Well, he made all 5.
Yes.
And he made
4 of them were trays.
That's right. In 17 minutes, he had 14 points.
That's not good.
That went a long way. You built up that lead, and you flirted with giving it up, but you know those 14 were in the bank.
They were bazooka'd. He bazooka'd
the tank
from one night anyway.
Yeah.
No. That was Lewis Robert, who hit a grand slam. How cool is that? It was his first start. He had a walk earlier in the game, and I think, did he steal a base? And then he hit a grand slam to win the game. That's pretty good all the way around. Young guy coming up, like
it. Think he should be on the opening day roster?
No,
someone
I don't
get Rick Hahn on the phone.
I'm not a complete idiot. I am a slight idiot, but I just like the idea that we're seeing impact from guys that are going to be a part of it, right? I mean, Kopech had a great camp, has had a great camp. Now Louis Robert gets into the picture, and you look at, Dane Dunning had a really good outing. Dylan Cease had a good outing. I'm all for having young guys give a hint of what the future is going to look like, but I'm not about, again, they've got 19 players that have made their debut for the White Sox. Did you see that supposedly one of the guys they're looking at there, Kevbo, is is Connor Gillespie. Is that pretty wild? He's
his brother.
Who's the guy they have?
Casey.
Yeah.
So Connor is. They're talking about bringing him back.
Oh boy.
Okay.
Can you
the
not
two
have
brothers
enough?
Have always wanted to play together.
And one day contract.
And no, he's
to
available.
Retire as the White Sox.
Jeez, you guys are unbelievable. He can still play a little bit, okay. And he is available, right?
Matt Forte
he's
with the Bears. Agent. Connor Gillespie.
I said that
with the
correctly.
Sox. I know, but I couldn't believe that this was actually a consideration.
No, I read that somewhere online.
Really?
That I'm not making it up.
I know, but I mean, really, the idea is
the idea
because
is that they,
just to keep a family happy.
Well, I don't think it's to keep the family happy. I think
I know what it is, to lose as many games as possible.
I don't think
I'm taking the under 68.
I don't think he's that bad a player.
I'm going to Vegas next week for the tournament. I'm taking the futures on the Sox. If Connor Gillespie's coming back.
Value selection.
You know, he's only 30. He might have a little bit of ball left in him. They need a third baseman, a lefty bat.
That's the idea.
What ball did he have in him when he was 26?
He was okay. He wasn't great. Okay. He wasn't, you know, he's had a career, hasn't he? He's been in the major leagues. I mean, gosh.
Went from Manny Machado and that talk to Connor Gillespie.
I'll tell you what. We'll never speak of it again then. Would you prefer that?
No.
Report any of the rumors that are out there.
I love the idea. I just don't get the idea, but I love it. Yeah, because the two boys wanted to play together at some point. Yeah, we're here to accommodate
Trust
you.
The process, Brian.
Listen, that's not why Does they
Louis,
bring him
if
in.
If Louis Robert has it's a brother, added, I'm all for it.
It's an added little benefit is that the brothers, you know.
If Louis Robert has a brother, Yoan Moncada.
Basically, that would be a reason for Connor Gillespie to take less money to come to the White Sox than he's not getting on the open market.
Take less money?
You heard what I said. Put it together.
I didn't know there was a bidding war. I mean, apparently,
I didn't say that.
Somewhere
I said
Jake Arrieta.
I said he would be willing to take less money to go to the Sox than he's not getting on the open market. Okay?
Okay.
I'm exhausted now.
I am too.
Yeah, but I mean, your negativity is just oozing through the radio. I mean, my God! I thought Dustin had the kind of negative viewpoint cornered.
Should we do a
don't
viewpoint.
Drag me into this? I've stayed out of it. I'm just sitting here listening and enjoying myself.
Staying out of Sox business.
I didn't say that either. Kevin.
Light them up.
That's not allowed either.
I'm commending you for staying out of White Sox business.
Light them up. 312-644-6767. Do they need Connor Gillespie?
You know what? I mean, seriously, I think that the problem that you have in here is you know, what do you want? I mean, there's rumors all over the place about, you know, Moustakas and
not
who else.
See, yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying, another rumor that's out there is this. And now you're like, I mean, hey, the guy was a decent servant.
Okay.
What the hell?
So Matt Davidson can't get any time at third base, but let's go down White Sox history lane.
I didn't say that. I don't know that Matt Davidson is a third baseman. Is the actual the issue there? Right. I mean, maybe he'll get some time. Maybe he won't. I mean, the idea of Yomer playing there. I mean, that seems to be what's going to happen, right, Kevin? If you watch what's going on,
he won yard yesterday.
Okay.
This segment of the show brought to us by O'Reilly Auto Parts. No,
Go ahead. Yes, he changed his name.
I liked him as Carlos.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Here we go.
Don't you dare say a bad word about Yomer Sanchez.
He is the personality of that team. He's got a big personality, and he's a lot of fun, and he is a great dude. Okay. 312-644-6767. It's Molly and Hanley on the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
All I heard from people around the NFL is that we don't like this guy. And the sort of wiseacre stuff that he did in college with putting a hot tub in his room and wearing the anti-Trump cap to play golf at a Trump golf course. And just, you know, he's sort of a wise guy. And I met him, and I thought he was very reasonable. I thought he had good analyses of who he is as a person.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the score. That is Peter King on the Dan Patrick Show, talking about Josh Rosen, the UCLA quarterback, and the difficulty that he's having to kind of, as one headline put it, trying to prove he's not the next Jay Cutler, in terms of attitude and desire to play football and that sort of thing. And it's very interesting to hear Peter, because he says that NFL teams have, he termed it an inherent distrust of rich kids, basically. Let's listen.
To me, the NFL has an inherent distrust of rich kids. They just do. And you have to prove to them that being rich doesn't matter. Josh Rosen's family is wealthy. His great-grandmother founded the Wharton School at Penn. His father is a very successful surgeon in Los Angeles. They've got a lot of money. So a lot of people in the NFL just sort of roll their eyes at that to begin with.
And then you throw in the fact that who was it? It was Mike Lombardi who said that that a lot of his humanitarian causes makes you wonder what his priority is, basically. Is he about humanitarianism, or is he about football? And believe it or not, that sort of thing matters in the NFL, and that can affect how a player is perceived, where he's drafted, who wants to build around him. It is a very strange and yet interesting dynamic when trying to project what a player will be at the next level.
So if Johnny Manziel hadn't happened, and I'm not just talking about the partying, but the idea that he didn't need the NFL because his family was going to provide for him. If the football thing didn't work out, he could go back to Texas and have a nice living and everything else. And the Jay Cutler analogy is interesting as well, because...
Well, that's more personality.
Yeah,
and that's more
rubbing the guys wrong.
How
rubbing
you
people
are
wrong.
As a teammate.
Right. Are you aloof? You know, do you feel like you're not, you don't necessarily need to be part of the group? But isn't the unspoken thing then said, the unspoken part of that is that they want guys who are desperate to get out of whatever economic situation they're in. So, you know, if you want to, you know, pull your whole family out of poverty, you know you're going to break your ass to be an NFL player and get
that
contract.
That's part of it, but it's also they've been exposed to other things. They have other thoughts. They have different ideas. They don't have the, you know, Tom Brady comes from a good background and had money and went to football games. You know, a lot of guys, their first pro football game is the one they appear in. It's not like you can't succeed if you have money, but it has to do more with the idea that you are distracted by things that are not football related. You're not one-eyed about football. Who's more one-eyed about football than Tom Brady? But I think that with a guy like Jay, it's more, you know, whatever. It's more, you know, well, there's a reason for everything. Somebody asked him a question in an interview about a particular interception he threw, and his response: did you ever play football? You ever play quarterback? Do you have any idea? You know, it's not along the lines of taking kind of responsibility. There is a different. That's why the NFL is afraid of it. I don't think it's strictly because they have money and they can fall back on money. I think it's more they're not one-eyed about football. It's more about having you know, that absolute fixation with the game that is demanded of players at the highest level, and it is just essential for a quarterback.
If Brady didn't get drafted in the sixth round, if he was sitting here like Josh Rosen, knowing you're going to go almost certainly going to go in the first round, they get questioned, is there going in the top 10 or top 5 or whatever. If he didn't have that to prove, or that chip on his shoulder to prove to everyone that, okay, I went all the way to the sixth round, and guess what? I'm going to be the greatest of all time. Is that motivation? Is that a different type of motivation than a guy who, whatever personality questions are out there, or whether his focus is there or his drive, knows that he's going to be a first round quarterback? Does that come into play at all?
312-644-6767. That is the telephone number. You know, it's a bad deal for the. For the Bears, because you want that guy off the board. You want those guys to be taken. You want as many of those guys as humanly possible to as many quarterbacks as you can get. You know, there's a possibility that four could be in play before the Bears selection, which, again, every time a quarterback goes, that means a player drops that the Bears would like. So you got to look at it from their perspective. But, you know, it's very strange. I can't help but think Josh Rosen is at the combine telling people, you know, it's the best decision you'll ever make to draft me. That's along the lines of what Cade McNaught was saying when he was at the combine. He stood out in the hallway, and as guys walked by, he was saying, hey, don't forget me, draft me. It'd be the best move you make. And some people love that confidence, and some people think that it's just it's a guy being half a punk. And it's interesting to see the different ways of looking at it. I think the NFL doesn't want complicated. I think the NFL wants people that kind of fall into line with the shield. And I think, again, they are looking for obsession. They're looking for guys that are obsessed with what they do. The quarterback position, to answer your question about Tom Brady, the quarterback position is a very complicated one. I don't know that Brady only became a good quarterback. You're implying that as a sixth-round pick, that somehow aided him and that made him. You know, he split time in college. If you ever look at tape of him at the combine, he had a bad body. The things that he did to work on his game were out of necessity, were out of desperation because he wanted to play. But it's also he wasn't prepared to be the player taken when he was taken, or higher than when he was taken. And he could be mad about that and all the rest of it. You know, go talk to your coaches at Michigan because they were splitting time with a guy that was a baseball player. So it's there are always reasons why people drop. What happened to Kurt Warner? How did Kurt Warner end up being a guy out of Northern Iowa and out of football and stacking cans at the – what was the difference there? It turned out that he had unbelievable pinpoint accuracy and I was a hell of a player. And you don't – you know, it's a really difficult position to scout. We'll talk to Greg Gabriel about it next. But, I think the takeaway is the NFL doesn't want to make a decision on somebody. They want a guy to fit what they believe a guy should fit. They have a certain – prototype of personality, of behavior, and anything that varies from that. Again, Jay Cutler-esque. Oh my God, this is the next Jay Cutler. That is so unfair to put on anybody because, you know, Cutler had plenty of time and plenty of opportunity.
He's sort of a wise guy.
He's sort of a wise guy, Joe. You run into people like that.
But Jay's family didn't have money. Dad was a cop or a state trooper.
Jay's family didn't come from big money. But
yeah,
Jay,
not like Wharton School of Business.
But Jay's personality was acerbic.
Right.
And that's what they see with this kid. There's two different concepts there.
Right.
One is that he's a rich kid, and that's not good for the NFL, according to Peter King. And it makes people suspicious. And we'll ask Greg Gabriel about that next. The other is that he's got humanitarian causes. And you know what? I mean, he's not obsessed with football.
Yeah.
And that's what Mike Lombardi is saying. The other one is that he's kind of a jerk sometimes. And he's been kind of a jerk. And he's a wise guy. And that, so he's got a few shots against him. And how do you measure that when you're talking about the guy whose position makes him the biggest leader on the field?
And before some of the stuff that he was criticized for on the field when he had apologized earlier this year, it was about his height. And then sometimes it also feels like, okay, they don't like his height and his size, so they're going to find things that they don't like about the guy.
He's sort of a wise guy.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
The best answer he gave me is that, you know, having all this money and being this competitive and being at the combine and playing in the Pac-12 and everything, that should prove to you that, you know, how much I love football and how much I want football. I don't have to work this hard. I don't have to do all this. The fact that I'm doing it and doing it at a high level should prove to everybody that, hey, the first time I get benched, I'm not going to quit and go home and live in the mansion in L.A.
Mullen Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. That's Peter King talking about Josh Rosen. And we're delighted to welcome in our friend, Greg Gabriel. Greg, how are you?
Oh, I'm glad to hear I'm your friend still.
Well, you know you're my friend. You've been my friend for many years, Greg.
Like 17 now, I think.
Is that right?
See, yeah.
That's pretty good, buddy. I mean, I hold you in very high esteem. And if I don't call you daily to tell you that, you should know it anyway.
Oh, okay.
Okay. How many guys visited you in the hospital? Didn't I bring you a book one time?
Oh, yes, you did.
See? That's love, my friend.
Got a little Phil Jackson in you.
We were talking about Josh Rosen, and I find this fascinating because there's so many people that come to mind, so many guys. There's a couple of things out there. You got Peter King saying, you know, you heard him there. He's not going back to the mansion. He's talking about the NFL doesn't like rich kids that, you know, you need a little desperation. You need guys that want to have it. Then you got stories about his personality. He's Jay Cutler-esque. Ooh, that's a harsh one.
He's sort of a wise guy.
That is exactly what Peter said, and that's because he's a little bit acerbic with his personality, and that doesn't play with people. And then throw into it, I thought this one was great. Lombardi said, you know, he's got humanitarian causes. Is he more interested in humanitarian issues or football? Like, everybody wants a one-eyed guy, which is an Australian term for just obsessed with one thing, focus, absolute laser focus on football.
Well, I don't know if that's got to be the case, but Peter has some very good points, and the one you mentioned is kind of Jay Cutler-esque. That's the one that he reminds me of the most. He's got a little bit – this is coming, you know, from people who made school calls. He's got a little bit of a entitlement-type attitude. Very, very intelligent kid, but he's going to let you know about it when you walk in the room, that he's the smartest guy in the room. You know, got kind of a harsh personality, doesn't get along with people real well. You know, as far as his teammates, he's not the most liked team, not or most liked guy, and he's not the most disliked guy. Not a leader. He put it this way, he doesn't have the intangibles that you're looking for to be the leader of your team at the most important position on the team. When you look at his mechanics are probably the best of any quarterback in this class. But then, you know, you look at the record, he's barely over 500 as a starter at UCLA, and it's not like UCLA's got a bunch of scrubs playing on their football team. And in big games, he doesn't always come up big. His passing percentage for his career is just over 60%. Which is good. It's not great. You'd like about 64-65% based on the offense that he plays in. And then he's had some injury issues. He missed half the 2016 season with a shoulder injury. He's had some concussion issues, missed a couple games this year. So I think there's a lot of unanswered questions. He could turn out to be a great pro, or he could turn out to be a very average pro that you just say, you know what, we never should have drafted him.
Well, Greg, how far will teams go to figure that out? You have the first impression. You talk to people who know him or coaches or whomever. Do you go on campus yourself? Do you send somebody out there to talk to the trainer and talk to the people at the dorm? Or how many stones will you overturn to try to figure out who the guy really is?
Well, it's a lot. I mean, you got your area scouts have to dig up a lot of that information, and then you got to find out for yourself. And it's not going to be in a 15-minute combine interview. It's just not enough time. You're going to do it in a private workout setting, because the pro day is going to be run by whoever his quarterback guru is, and you know everybody gets to watch, and he's going to make his best throws. They don't show anything that any weaknesses. They just show the strengths. It's a scripted workout. And you're there to watch, and that's it. So it's a very false impression of what he is or what he isn't. It's when you go in and do a private workout and you spend a few hours with him in the classroom, part of that's interview, part of that's doing board work, and I'm sure he's going to do very well on that stuff. And then just talking to him, learning about his personality, how you can deal with him. Then taking everything you did in the classroom out on the field, see how he responds to that. And then the coaches are going to come away with, do we want him or, you know, let's pass. And that happens a lot with these guys. And it's just a matter of doing your research and then going from there. I mean, he's going to go in the first round. He's probably going to go high in the first round. But I think there's some bust factor to him. There's also a chance, you know, he's like a wild card guy. He could turn out to be a great quarterback. I think he needs to grow up and mature a little bit. But at the same time, he could break your heart.
So, again, that boom or bust thing, does that make you more likely, less likely? Does it depend on the situation? How much does personality come into play, especially at a position where you are a leader just by the nature of your position?
Well, I'll put it this way. If you take him real high and he fails, yeah, you can kiss your career goodbye, or at least your career at the team you're working for, especially if he's a top 10 choice. Because if you fail on a quarterback taken in the top 10, you're gone. That's just what's happened in the last 10 years in the National Football League because of what you invested in that position to be your, you know, your next, and I hate the term franchise quarterback, but let's use it anyway, to be your franchise quarterback, because now you got to go back to square one and start all over again and get another guy. So that's the important thing, and I think, but as we've seen throughout the years, guys overrate or come up with a, we can fix him, he's going to be fine, and then they end up getting their heart broken over that situation. You know, I think Bortles is a perfect example. Now, it took him, you know, 4 years to turn around and become at least an adequate quarterback, but he was a guy that has already gotten a head coach, 3 offensive coordinators fired, and the GM demoted. So that's what happens when you take a guy that high and you miss on him at that position.
Did Johnny Manziel's experience heighten everyone's awareness or concern about, you know, you take the parting aspect out of it, just the idea that, you know, he walked in thinking, well, my talent carried me through the college game pretty well to the point where I won the Heisman. I don't really have to apply myself to, I'll just walk in and wow everybody.
Well, I think in Manziel's case, I don't think I know in Manziel's case, it wasn't a talent that beat him. Manziel's a talented guy. His character killed him. And he had no football character. He had no personal character. He's an addict, you know, as far as drugs and alcohol. Partying came first. He couldn't control himself, and it was a wasted pick. But there were signs of this, you know, coming up to the draft. You just didn't want to believe the signs because of the talent level, and you're thinking, okay, he's going to put guys in the stands. And in that case, it was more of an owner pick than a front office pick, from what I understand. But still, because or part of the result of taking that guy was a general manager got fired in Farmer.
Yeah, I think it's a really tough business that you're in. What happens with this thing now? What's the process? We know you had the combine. Everybody has their results. There are some unbelievable stars of the combine, Shaquem Griffin, and obviously Barkley was unbelievable. Then you go back and you got to start tearing them down and getting ready to start building them up. You're waiting for the combine recheck for the injured guys. How quickly does it take after the combine to get this board set?
Well, about a month is the best way to put it, because you still got the rest of the month of March and now really into the first week of April to get the pro days in, and that's another important part, you know, of the process. There's the pro days. Some guys who didn't have great results at the combine, they've got basically a chance to do a makeup test at their pro day. That happens over the next 4 weeks. You get all the medical, you go over the medical stuff, you got the rechecks, you know, especially like that that center from Ohio State, Price, who tore the pec doing the bench press. You know, he had surgery earlier this week. Now at the rechecks, you're going to find out exactly how long is he going to be out. Is he going to be ready for training camp? Is he going to miss the first month of training camp and maybe be ready for the first part of the season? You know, if they feel he's ready to go at the start of training camp, the injury might not hurt him at all as far as where he gets drafted. If it looks like it's going to be further in to the season, maybe misses a couple games or misses all of training camp, being that he's a rookie, that may drop him down a round, maybe more than a round. So these things have to be answered. You got your 30 visits. You're going to bring in some guys that you just have to sit down and talk to. You want the position coach to talk to them, the coordinator, the head coach, the general manager. Get to know the kid a little better, because you want to know exactly what you're buying come draft day at the end of April.
Greg, how much, if at all, does your legwork during the draft come back during free agency when a guy's been in the league for a few years and you're considering, you know, now he's got the stats at the NFL level just to look at, and you know, how much you go back and look at your notes, your interviews, and everything else, and put that into the equation?
Well, I know when I was working in the league, if you had a kid that was, you know, a free agent after just 4 years, we always went back to the college report to see what we had, and then you've got the pro reports to correlate with that to see, okay, has he done what we had thought he was going to do, or did he play better, did he play worse? But, yeah, you bring it into the equation only to see, you know, what – how good were you with your feeling on him as a player coming out of college. Were you accurate, or is he better or worse than you originally thought coming out of college? But, yeah, comes into play. Now, does every team do it that way? I can't say. That's something that's probably we'll look just at what he's done as a pro. But also, it's scheme fit. And in free agency, scheme fit more than anything else, because you're not going to sign a guy and give him those big dollars if he's going to be a guy that's going to be the proverbial square peg in a round hole, using one of Jerry's terms.
What do you make of Griffin? I mean, where does a guy like that go? Does he move up in the draft, and how far does he move up? And, you know, the team that takes him knows they're keeping him. It just seems like he's a guy that's going to make a roster and be a player.
Who's the player? I didn't hear
Shaquem
the name.
Griffin.
You know, I've said this all along. I think it's going to be, you know, athleticism. He passed the test, but you knew he was going to pass the test. I still think that it's going to be a very forward-thinking GM and coach that will pull the trigger on drafting him. You go back to the combine, as well as he worked out, you know, only one team interviewed him. And so that is a little bit telling. There's never been a player that's come into the league, and I'm not trying to be negative about the kid because it's a great story, just trying to be factual. There's never been anybody in the league who's played with one arm. So, and people go back and said, well, Pierre Paul of the Giants. Well, that's not the case. Pierre Paul has an arm. He's missing some fingers on his hand, but he has a full arm, where in this case, you know, he's got an arm or without a hand, and it's probably 10 inches shorter than the other one, and hand use in the NFL is very, very important, especially at that position. Does he get drafted? I think so. Probably ends up being late. I think he's got a chance of being a real good special teams player. Whether ever ascends to becoming a regular player, that remains to be seen. But I, you know, again, I think it's going to be a very forward-thinking guy who's going to make that decision.
All righty, Greg. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate your time as always.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks,
talk to you later.
That is Greg Gabriel. He is. That's interesting stuff.
He's sort of a wise guy,
and he used the exact same term. He's a wise guy. It's interesting that that's the perception and. Apparently, that is what they see. They see a guy that is kind of acerbic and has all the answers, and that sometimes doesn't play when you start talking about figuring out where to take people in the NFL draft. It's Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.